Stumbling on Happiness, author Daniel Gilbert. The mistake in our foresight. We treat our future selves as though we were our children, spending most of the hours of most of our days constructing tomorrows that we hope will make them happy. Rather than indulging in whatever strikes our momentary fancy, we take responsibility for the welfare of our future selves. The mistakes we make when we try to imagine our personal futures are like the errors optical illusions induce in our perceptions, lawful, regular, and systematic. They too have a pattern that tells us of the powers and limits of foresight, in much the same way that optical illusions tell us about the powers and limits of eyesight. That's what modern science has to tell us about how and how well the human brain can imagine its own future, and about how and how well it can predict which of those futures it will most enjoy. We all steer ourselves towards the futures we think will make us happy. Imagination has three shortcomings. Imagination's first shortcoming is its tendency to fill in and leave out without telling us. No one can imagine every feature and consequence of a future event. Hence, we must consider some and fail to consider others. Imagination's second shortcoming is its tendency to project the present onto the future. How we feel now can erroneously influence how we think we will feel later. Imagination's third shortcoming is its failure to recognize that things will look different once they've happened. In particular, that bad things will look a whole lot better. Realism, filling in memory. Our brains take millions of snapshots, storing these representations of the world in a memory bank that seems never to overflow. Later, when we want to remember our experience, our brains quickly reweave the tapestry by fabricating the bulk of the information that we experience as memory. This fabrication happens so quickly and effortlessly that we have the illusion that the entire thing was in our heads the entire time, but it was not. Information acquired after an event alters memory of the event. First, the act of remembering involves filling in details that were not actually stored. Second, we generally cannot tell when we are doing this because filling in happens quickly and unconsciously, overlooking the absences. Studies show that when ordinary people want to know whether two things are casually related, they routinely attend to information about what did happen and fail to consider information about what did not happen. Apparently, people have been making this mistake for a very long time. Our inattention to absences influences the way we think about the future. We fail to consider how much imagination fills in, but we also fail to consider how much it leaves out. To illustrate this point, we ask people to tell us how they think they would feel 2 years after the sudden death of their eldest child. When the persons we ask imagine the future, there is a whole lot missing, and the things that are missing matter. More of the same. Brains make ample use of the filling in trick when they remember the past or imagine the future, and the phrase filling in suggests an image of a hole being plugged with some sort of material. As it turns out, when brains plug holes in their conceptualizations of yesterday and tomorrow, they tend to use a material called today. Consider how often this happens when you try to remember the past. This tendency to fill in holes in our memories of the past with the material from the present is especially powerful when it comes to remembering our emotions. The more simply said, most of us have a tough time imagining a tomorrow that's terribly different from today, and we find it particularly difficult to imagine what we will ever think, want, or feel differently than we do now. Pre-feel, its power and limits. The imaginative processes that allow us to discover how a penguin looks, even when we are locked in a closet, are the same processes that allow us to discover how the future will feel when we're locked in the present. When the brain imagines, it enlists the aid of its sensory areas when it wants to imagine the sensible features of the world. The point here is that we generally do not sit down with a sheet of paper and start logically listing the pros and cons of the future events we are contemplating, but rather we contemplate them by simulating those events in our imaginations and then noting our emotional reactions to that simulation. Just as imagination previews objects, so does it pre-feel events. Pre-feeling often allows us to predict our emotions better than logical thinking does, but it has limits. How we feel when we imagine something is not always a good guide to how we will feel when we experience it. When we ask our brains to look at a real object and an imaginary object at the same time, our brains typically grant the first request and turn down the second. The brain considers the perception of reality to be its first and foremost duty. Thus, your request to borrow the visual cortex for a moment is expressly and summarily denied. Future events may request access to the emotional areas of your brains, but current events almost always get the right of way. Imagination has a hard time telling us how we will think about the future when we get there. If we have trouble foreseeing future events, then we have even more trouble foreseeing how we will see them when they happen. Cooking the facts. Over the course of human evolution, the brain and the eye have developed a contractual relationship in which the brain has agreed to believe what the eye sees and not to believe what the eye denies. So, if we're to believe something, then it must be supported by the facts. Our tendency to expose ourselves to information that supports our favoured conclusions is especially powerful when it comes to choosing the company we keep. We spend countless hours and countless dollars carefully arranging our lives to ensure that we're surrounded by people who like us and people who are like us. It isn't surprising, then, they tend to confirm our favoured conclusions. Most of us have ways of making other people confirm our favoured conclusions without ever engaging them in conversation. Corrigibility. As such, when we look back on the entire series, our impression is strongly influenced by its final items. This tendency is particularly acute when we look back on experiences of pleasure and pain. Memory's fixation on endings explains why women often remember childbirth as less painful than it actually was, and why couples whose relationships have gone sour remember that they were never really happy in the first place. At least we understand. Most of us make at least three important decisions in our lives: where to live, what to do, and with whom to do it. Without a formula for predicting utility, we tend to do what only our species does, imagine. Our brains have a unique structure that allows us to mentally transport ourselves into future circumstances and then ask ourselves how it feels to be there. When we imagine future circumstances, we fill in details that won't really come to pass and leave out details that will. When we imagine future feelings, we find it impossible to ignore what we're feeling now and impossible to recognize how we will think about the things that happen later. There is no simple formula to finding happiness, but if our great big brains do not allow us to go sure-footedly into our futures, they at least allow us to understand what makes us stumble.